talking sports with you as you start your day. This is the Wake Up Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors, with Blaine Bishop, Mark Howard, and Kevin Ingram on 104.5 The Zone.
It is 7:02. Welcome back to the Wake Up Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors. When trust matters, count on All Four Seasons Garage Doors right here in the Music City. They're pros for installation and repair. They're also family-owned and operated. They want you to visit their website, fourseasonsgarages.com, to find out more. Alongside Mark Howard, Jonathan Schaefer, our producer, I'm Kevin Ingram. Blaine is out this week. Coming up in an hour, Coach Mack will be with us. Dave McGinnis from Titans Radio between 8 and 9. Also later this hour, MTSU Athletics Director Chris Massaro will visit with Chris coming up around 7:45. Want to join us? 615-737-1045 or on Twitter at WUZ1045. Good to be back this morning after some time away on furlough last week. Got out and saw some of the beautiful scenery of our volunteer states. So spent some time with the family. Didn't go too far from home. So it was a good week out. Good to be back.
Well, I experienced some of the scenery of our volunteer state, and not as positive a takeaway as you.
Oh yeah,
I went down to Macon, Georgia, to transact some personal business. And driving back, just way too much stop and go traffic.
Oh, that's the worst.
So, and Chattanooga, good grief, almost through the whole city, it's more stop than go. So it was maddening, especially on a Sunday afternoon. It's the way it goes, man.
Yeah, that's the worst when you're just trying to get back home. Yeah. We always seem to experience that. Like if we go down to Alabama to the beach, go to Orange Beach. It's always joke. It takes 8 hours to get there and 16 hours to get back home. That's always the way it seems to go. But yeah, we got out and saw some state parks. One day we went down the Natchez Trace. So we drove about 40 or 50 miles down there, you know, starting over by the Loveless Cafe and heading south. And we went to Fall Creek Falls on Friday. I'll talk a little about that when we get to the Monday morning facial, but we had a good time.
I'm just glad that things are good between you and your wife, Amy, because a lot of times when couples whose marriages aren't as solid and secure as yours ends up being an episode on Dateline. Yeah, he slipped, officer. I don't know what happened. And you're down at the insurance company the next day to collect on the life.
Yeah, there you go. Nobody had change for a 20.
Mark, are you trying to jinx the poor guy? Because the last time you said something like that, Ryan Suckup lost his career.
No, I would never do that. I'm just complimenting. Kevin has got one of the best marriages of any of my friends. Rock solid, baby.
Well, does that mean Kevin's a good husband or you need better friends? Which one does that say?
A little bit of both, Jay.
Yeah, maybe so. Well, the marriage between SEC fans and their favorite football teams is very strong. But you know, will we get football this fall, and what will it look like? The SEC athletic directors are supposed to meet in Birmingham. Actually, meet face to face today. The Big Ten and Pac-12 last week said they're going to conference only. The SEC hasn't made any sort of decision, and Greg Sankey, the commissioner, we'll hear from in just a moment, has said, you know, we have a lot of contingency plans. They're probably not going to do anything, at least for a couple weeks, on deciding, you know, how the schedule is going to look. But you know, they've already lost some games with, say, Alabama and USC. I mean, that's one that's not going to happen, the Pac-12 staying closer to home. But he says his concern is high to very high about the spread of COVID-19. A little from the commissioner on Marty and McGee on the SEC Network, talking about how a lost college football season would impact the programs involved. Here's Sankey.
Yeah, we're going to have conversations. It's going to hurt. It hurts the conference office, but the conference office will go on. If we can't play, it will hurt our athletic programs, but our athletic programs will go forward. We're all going to look different. We're going to have to be honest about that reality. But we have a strength that will continue. It's a conference, don't forget, that started in the Great Depression. I mean, think about an institution that started in 32, 33 that's thriving like we are. It went through World War II, and its participants were called the war. tough time through integration, and probably no more difficult place than here across our universities. And then the economics of the 70s, and yet we've thrived and grown, and we're going to get through this. I gave this presentation to my ADs and my presidents this week, but don't forget who we are. We're going to have to come together to make decisions. They're going to be hard decisions, but that's what we're going to have to do as leaders.
Greg Sankey, the SEC commissioner on the SEC Network, and again, he's going to meet with the athletic directors today, and they'll have discussions about where to go with fall football, and you know, will it be a situation where the SEC and the other power conferences fall in line with what's already happened, and you know, maybe you see just a conference-only schedule, maybe it gets pushed back a month. How will it look? Will they add conference games if that's what they decide to do? A lot of things to be determined there, Mark.
I agree with Sankey. You know, we're going to look back on this, and it won't so much be a bump in the road, but it'll be something, you know, that everybody went through, and it just all depends on how the SEC ADs manage this. You know, he confers with biostatisticians, you know, which I know that that Schaefer does every day, but seriously, you know, Sankey is a smart guy. You know, Sankey is not a guy who's going to panic. He's going to wait as long as he can and assess the data. But I still think they're, you know, to me, you know, prolonging the inevitable. I just don't see, in my opinion, on everything that I've read, you know, heard and seen, that's going to change profoundly in the next 2 or 3 weeks. Maybe it does. And that's what they're hoping. They're literally, you know, coming up with a Hail Mary here and hoping things will change in 2 or 3 weeks. I don't think they're going to come through with a decision after today. That's what most of the reports say. But I do think that eventually they're going to follow suit with the Big Ten and the Pac-12 and stay in conference, as will the ACC and the Big 12. You look at the SEC today, and 10 of the 14 member schools are in areas that have some of the hottest, you know, coronavirus numbers in the country, especially in the states of Tennessee, Florida, Louisiana, and Texas. And I'm sure I'm missing a couple, but whatever the case, you know, Sankey, I think the SEC sort of feels like the leader here, and other conferences, you know, might follow them. I think they were surprised, you know, maybe that the Big Ten made its decision last week. But I just think that the undeniable fact is that if they're going to get any type of a college season in, it's got to be in conference. And that is the last step to playing in the spring, you know, which to me is their nuclear option, but not a very appealing one.
You know, and that there are obvious downsides to not playing any non-conference games, but there's also an upside to playing an all-conference season. You know, would they add games, Mark? Do you think? I mean, would we not necessarily just be looking at the regular 8-game SEC season? You know, might they add a couple and make it a 10-game season? I mean, for 1 year, it'd be pretty cool to watch and see how that went down. I don't know that I see any difference between playing all conference games and saying having a Kentucky Louisville game or a Clemson South Carolina game. I mean, are those any less safe than playing an all SEC schedule would be? I don't know that they are, but it seems like it's kind of an all or nothing deal. I mean, it's not going to be like a deal where, you know, some teams are playing some non-conference games and some teams aren't. It seems like it's going to be, you know, the same deal for everybody in these conferences.
I think, Kevin, it's more about the calendar than it is about the odometer, although, you know, some of these that they do want to cut down on these long road trips, although in the SEC, that doesn't preclude, you know, getting on an airplane and having to do that, presumably. But I think they want to push the start of the season back either to mid-September or early October. I think that's a big part of it. But, yeah, I could see them adding one or two conference games just for this season. And the Pac-12 announced that it does have a 9-game plan and a 10-game plan. So, you know, you see which direction they're going. I would just like it to be uniform with the Power Five schools. If we're going to start picking, a playoff, format, and I would not be surprised, Kevin, if they deviated away from the normal 4-team playoff and had the five the champions of the five power conferences and maybe three wild cards and have an 8-team playoff, or one wild card and have a 6-team playoff.
You really think that might happen? See, I think it's
possible.
I think it's going to be the 4-team playoff. And
okay, well,
I'd be all for that, but I don't see it happening. You may be right though. I mean, maybe they do change it up for this year. 7:13 on 104.5 The Zone. Wake Up Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors. When we come back, where's the NFL stand on getting ready for a season and a name change in D.C.? More of the Wake Up Zone just ahead. Hang around. Wake Up Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors. FourSeasonsGarages.com is where you can find out more. Alongside Mark Howard, I'm Kevin Ingram. Want to join us here, 615-737-1045. All right, Mark, give us our Lee Company Hot Performer for this Monday morning.
Our Lee Company Hot Performer is the aforementioned Colin Morikawa, who beat Justin Thomas in a three-hole playoff that, was just incredible in terms of the ups and downs that both of them went through. Morikawa was trailing by three strokes going into the final round and then finished fast. Played the last three holes in one under after Thomas had two bogeys. But on that first playoff hole, both of them had bad drives, but Thomas drains a 50-foot birdie, and Morikawa answers with a 24-footer to extend the playoff. And as we mentioned, he ended up winning on the third playoff hole. So Colin Morikawa, our Lee Company Hot Performer, Lee Company, serving Middle Tennessee families and businesses since 1944. All you need. Didn't mean to go stroke by stroke with the Hot Performer, but had to have
it was exciting. Call. Yeah, it was cool. I mean, when Justin Thomas made that 50-footer, you're thinking, I mean, you make a 50-footer for birdie on a playoff hole, you're thinking, okay, man, I'm in good shape here. And then Morikawa just poured in that 25-footer right on top of him. And then, they got to the third playoff hole. Each of them had a chance to win on the second one. They got to the third one. Thomas was behind, probably the smallest tree on the golf course. But all he could do was punch out, and Morikawa was able to get up and down and get the win. But excellent young players. What's that?
The crowds, yeah, it'd be nice to see the galleries back there. I miss Gary McCord. I understand that CBS decided to retool their golf coverage, but I miss Gary McCord.
Yeah, Gary, I like Gary McCord a lot, too. He always added some levity, in a sport where it's often needed. I thought he was always a lot of fun. And the whole deal with him not being allowed to do the Masters, I always thought was ridiculous. But
what did those Masters people say to him?
Your commentary is a little bit offensive, Gary. It's so weird to watch these tournaments with no fans, though, because if you think about what the response would have been around 18 when Thomas made that putt and then Morikawa made his, I mean, they would have been a madhouse, but instead you just quiet and move on to the next hole. Hello, friends. But yeah, that was a fun finish yesterday. And I got to admit, I did not miss the Bryson DeChambeau experience yesterday. Am I the only one that gets a little exhausted by that guy?
Can't stand him.
I mean, he's an excellent player, there's no doubt. But gosh, it's just
a jerk.
Too much.
Don't point the camera at me too long. You're going to ruin my brand.
What a dirtbag.
Wait, what was that? Edith Bunker? What was that?
I don't know what that was. That was Bryson DeChambeau whining like the little be-you-know-what he is.
Wow.
Oh, man. Come on. Just shut up. There are people, there are people out there, scraping to make a living, and this do-bag is out there, worried, about too much FaceTime.
Yeah, that was a little bit of a turnoff for me too. I just think his whole deal is kind of exhausting to watch. And again, good player, he's going to win a lot, but then you got him and Brooks Koepka having some kind of feud. Just you like know, the PGA yeah. Tour's, you know, heavyweight battle.
My toughest decision would be Bryson DeChambeau and Rory Sabatini, you know, who always used to rip Tiger. You know, it's like, to me, that would be like the Red Sox playing the Mets. If it's possible for both of them to lose, then that would be the case.
Yeah. Speaking of brands, the Washington Redskins are going to announce today, according to all reports, that they're going to change their nickname. It felt like this was coming. They're not exactly going to announce the new name just yet. Sports Business Daily said they had some trademark issues that had to be taken care of first, but they are expected to keep the burgundy and gold colors of that franchise, which have been their colors for years. But no more Washington Redskins. We'll see what's next. And, you know, Daniel Snyder a few years ago said it would never happen. Well, here we are.
Yeah, put it in capital letters, baby. That's why you never put it in capital letters. What are they going to change their name to? The Fighting Snyders? I don't know, but he has pivoted so fast. I think he needs a chiropractor because this came upon them pretty rapidly.
Well, when those major sponsors start talking about pulling out, then that gets people's attention.
And Fred Smith is like totally buried him. Someone who Snyder reveres, and Fred Smith has basically washed his hands of Snyder. So something must have happened internally. There's got to be a great story there that we're probably never going to find out about the internal discord with the Washington Redskins.
I heard Washington Warriors was one that's been discussed. I wonder what they will do.
Red Tails.
Yeah. And then you wonder what happens with, you know, the Cleveland Indians, the Atlanta Braves and Chicago Blackhawks have said we're not changing, but Cleveland Indians, I would say, will probably be the next one where we'll see a change. They've already gone away from Chief Wahoo here in the last couple of years.
Braves are not going to change. And that's, I don't see why that is a pejorative term. The chop, they're going to like not sanction it. They're not going to ban it, but they're just not going to sanction it. They're going to walk that line to where they're not really getting rid of it. They're just not going to, you know, admit to it being theirs. So are they going to change the name of the Chop House? You know, which is the stadium, I believe.
Yeah, the Chop House is the restaurant out in right field. Yeah. They had it at the old ballpark, and they have it at the new one. So, but that's the news. As far as the Washington Redskins go, they're going to announce today that they'll change the nickname. The NFL and the Players Union will have reps meet today talking about the upcoming year, about the start of training camp is about 2 weeks away. They'll have to decide, among other things, Mark, on the preseason schedule. Players want no games. League wants two games. Who knows where it'll fall? We've talked about what the preseason really means. I mean, it is a chance to go out and play full speed football and you know, to give guys a chance to make an impression when the lights are on. But at the same time, in this season, maybe no games is the way to go for this 2020 year, which, you know, just about anything can happen.
Okay, players are mindful of 2011, where there was no off-season program and the gyms were actually open due to the lockout. But injuries spiked by 25%. Now, some might argue that here we are almost 10 years later, and the players probably are a little more vigilant about staying in shape. But even so, injury spiking by 25%, that's an alarming number. And even if they went up, you know, 15% in this camp, and we're not even talking about players testing positive. We're not even talking about players that opt out. So you're talking about a monumental challenge of roster management. Plus, the players want the numbers of how many players reporting knocked down to 80, even 75. I don't think they're going to get it to 75, but you know, 80, you know, might be the number we see. You're right. They don't want a preseason. They're worried about emergency protocols, opt-outs. if they're going to have to, you know, put any of their money in escrow. So these two sides have a lot to talk about.
What do you come down on the whole putting money in escrow thing? To me, if these guys get out there and play this season, then I think they should get their money. And well, I get that they're not going to be gate receipts and all that like there normally would be, or at least, you know, limited because you're not going to have full stadiums. But, hey, man, I think if I was a player and I committed to play the 16-game schedule, I'd want my money too.
Well, it doesn't mean they won't get their money. It just means some of it will be held back, you know, pending them reaching a certain level in revenues. And I think, you know, the optimistic owners feel like as the season goes along, more and more fans will be allowed in stadiums. None of us know if that's going to happen. But also remember, too, Kev, that this helps figure in to next year's salary cap. And it's not in the players' best interests to keep revenues down, because that means if the cap falls, guys are going to lose their jobs. Veterans are going to lose their jobs. And this will become a league of rookies and second-year guys because teams have to, you know, adjust economically.
Yeah. As far as the preseason goes, I mean, I know you want to get out there and play at least some under, you know, under game conditions before you play an actual season, but if you don't play, how much is really lost there other than just the risk of injury and not going over the protocols in some sort of, I don't know, you want to call it a dry run because you're going to be actually traveling and all that stuff, but at least a test to see how it goes before the regular season.
Very few of us are going to sit around and lament the demise of the preseason, even if it's just for a year. The less preseason football, the better. Although preseason football is better than no football at all. And in terms of the evaluation process, you know, I think you probably want to play a couple of games. You just do. And, you know, look at the Titans. They're trying to find a kicker. You know, they're maybe trying to find a right tackle. Although, you know, it looks like, at least for now, it's going to be Dennis Kelly. But still, you want to get your team on the field in some way, shape, or form. I understand the players being concerned about the injury factor, because I think it's going to be huge this year. Any way you look at it, it's going to be huge without a off season. So we'll see what happens.
Is Steven Goskowski the guy kicker? Supposedly he bought a home around here.
You never know. A few things have to happen before that happens. Yeah, well, first of all, he went to Memphis, so it's not like he's a total stranger to this state. But I'll be honest with you. I don't know what he's thinking. I'm sure he didn't buy a house with the expectation that he'd be kicking for the Titans. But you never say never. And John Robinson admitted that he wouldn't close the door on that. You know, Ryan Succop's still out there, and I'm not sure, you know, what his state of readiness is. I'd be more than happy to run him off the roster.
Jeez, Bart, you've already ran him off once. I mean, how many more?
I'm just kidding.
Send this guy packing. Derrick Henry, we know, will be on the roster this year, but what will his contract situation be? The deadline is Wednesday to reach a long-term deal for players who are under tags. He is among 15 players around the NFL to have either a franchise or transition tag. I think 14 of the 15 are franchise tags. Adam Schefter of ESPN was saying that only a couple deals he thinks will likely get done with, you know, the financial uncertainty from the pandemic that's going on. So in a couple days, we'll know for sure on Derrick Henry and what it'll look like for him as far as his contract for this year. Will it be playing on the tag or having a long-term deal?
I think anyway, the Titans are looking at Derrick Henry this year, next year, and then after that, who knows? So even if they agree to a deal, I don't think it's going to be any longer. You know, the real guts of the contract, it wouldn't seem to be like it's going to be any longer than 3 years. You know, beyond that, you know, we've seen what happened. You know, what's happened. You know, what's happened with, you know, David Johnson, with Todd Gurley. even Ezekiel Elliott wasn't really the same player last year that we saw dominate the league. So to me, that's got to be a cause for concern. Henry, might be the exception to the rule. He has, for the most part, a limited amount of wear on him. But he right now is viewed as a pure runner, a two-down back, a guy that's not necessarily going to make a huge contribution to your passing game, whereas some of the other running backs in the league, the Alvin Kamaras, the Ezekiel Elliotts, the Christian McCaffreys, the Saquon Barkleys, even Le'Veon Bell, a little more involved.
When he's on a team.
Yeah.
To me, the pass-catching part of it, that's not really why you have Derrick Henry anyway.
Yeah, I understand that, but he's not great in pass protection. He's not great in terms of catching the ball. He's a great runner. There's nothing wrong with that. You can make a good living out of it. But if Christian McCaffrey's making $16 million a year, Derrick Henry's probably worth about 12. That's kind of the way I see it.
We'll find out by Wednesday. NHL gets back on the ice. Training camp starts today for the Predators and the other 23 teams that are in the postseason. The Preds play against Arizona starting on August 2nd in the best-of-five qualifying series. But they'll be on the ice at Bridgestone Arena today. Not open to the public. There will be a chance for media to check it out. But training camp's getting started in the next phase of this whole NHL return. And, again, they'll head up to Edmonton and play Arizona beginning in early August.
Well, a couple of things. If you want to watch the Predators at practice, if you're in the media, you're going to watch them from a very safe distance. That's number one.
Right.
Number two, the one thing that continues to bother me. Hey, I'm glad that they got this all hashed out. I'm glad that they got the CBA extended 4 years, so we don't even have to worry about that after next year. But I still don't like the relatively short lead up to the playoffs. Two exhibition games and then you dive in. That's crazy. I think they should play four or five games, even the play-in teams, to at least, get to an acceptable level. I mean, two exhibition games? That's not a lot of time, Kevin.
I think it's enough. Get out there and play. Let's go.
Good grief. It's like what about the college basketball season? Could you imagine, you play, you go through 3 weeks of practice, and then you play like Iceland and, some Division II school, and then you go right to the tournament. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
You got to find out who's ready to play. Well, I mean, you're not going straight into the best of seven anyway. I mean, you're going to play a best of five, and then the other teams will play for the seeding. To me, it's okay. A couple exhibition games, they'll be ready to go. Let's roll. How much longer do you want to wait? What, do you want to start in the middle of September?
Play a few games.
7:37, Wake Up Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors. Come back, Chris Massaro is going to join us from Middle Tennessee State. Also, on the way, top of the hour, our friend Dave McGinnis from Titans Radio. Our Monday morning visit with Coach Mack is on the way. More Wake Up Zone coming up next here on The Zone. .745 the time on 104.5 The Zone. Wake Up Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors. You can go to foursseasonsgarages.com to find out more. With Mark Howard, I'm Kevin Ingram. Jonathan Schaefer, our producer, going to check in with our friend Dave McGinnis from Titans Radio coming up at 8 o'clock, 4 hour with Coach Mack on the way. Let's bring in Chris Massaro. He is the, of course, athletics director at Middle Tennessee State University. Chris, what's going on this morning?
Good morning, Kevin. Not much. How's it going with you guys? Nothing to talk about, right?
Yeah, I know. We hopefully have plenty to talk about, and in a good way. Chris, from what I've read and heard, it sounds like things have gone okay on your campus in terms of athletes returning to work out. Is it one of those things, though, Chris, where it's day by day or hour by hour, and you just kind of hope for the best in all of this?
Oh, there's no doubt. There's no doubt about that. And you worry about days like today, where coming off of a weekend and you know, what everybody's done and those kind of things. Because we do a really good job of controlling the environment when they're doing their workouts on our campus. It's just those other 20 hours of the day that you just don't have any control over, and you just try to preach personal responsibility and all those kind of things. So yeah, it's a day-to-day thing. And somebody could do everything right and still get COVID. And so that's what we try to preach too.
You have two games in football against ACC teams. You play at Duke. You're at home for Virginia Tech. You also have UConn on the schedule a little bit later on. If those games are called off and you get into a deal where you're only playing conference games, is there any chance of recouping some of what you might lose financially?
Well, I mean, it's kind of interesting, Kevin, because our two ACC games are actually home and home games. So the Duke game is, they came to our place last year, so we owe them a game at their place. And Virginia Tech's game one of a two-game series on it. So I have not had any conversations with Kevin White or Whit Babcock or the ADs at Duke and Virginia Tech. And they've not made any decisions yet in terms of what their scheduling is going to be, that I think their presidents are going to decide somewhere around July 29th. So what happens is that we've got our guarantee games at UConn, and so we had less of a guarantee game because we really thought that Virginia Tech at home, that's a place where we could generate some revenue. So we went less guarantee route this year than we do normally. Last year we had two Big Ten teams for over $3 million, and this year we're not really over our skis that much on the guarantee game. So I think we're okay. We're going to lose or postpone, or I don't know how it's going to work out, a home and home, if the ACC does just go conference only with those two schools. But it's going to be really interesting across the country to see how people handle the reschedule or the buyout piece on that.
Chris, how scary and sad has it been to see schools eliminating sports, and also to kind of consider what the breaking points are, you know, when you consider financially where all these universities are, you know, in various spots around the country?
Yeah, and I think that when Stanford chops out 11 sports, that raises everybody's eyebrows, you know, and it's just so hard on kids, you know, and that's the one thing that I want everybody to kind of remember, is that these are still 18 to 22 year olds that work so hard at their craft, whether they're on the fencing team or the football team. I mean, it takes a lot of skill and a lot of effort to compete in at the Division I level, and that people can't lose sight of that. And what I'm telling our guys and our student athletes is my job, and what we're trying to do, we're doing everything we can, everything possible, to get you guys to the starting line. Usually at this time, we're talking about strategies in the race and how we're going to win the race. But now it's just really to get them to the starting blocks. You know, and if we can do that, and I don't know if the race is going to be 50 meters long or 3 miles long, but that's what we've got to do. And we all have a responsibility to do that. I've got my responsibility. The student athlete has his or her responsibilities to take care of themselves, not put themselves in situations where they increase the odds to get COVID. And fans have their responsibilities. And part of all of our responsibility is to wear a mask and to wash your hands, do the social distancing, some things that perhaps we haven't done so well at the last 2 or 3 months, and it's starting to catch up to us. So if we really want college sports, that's what we need to do. So mask up, everybody. Support your local school, and let's see what we can do.
Our guest is Chris Massaro, the athletics director at MTSU.
Chris, how realistic is spring football for your school and your conference?
You know, it's Mark, we've got a 9 o'clock conference call with our ADs this morning, and I'm sure that will be one of the topics. It's sort of been, in a lot of ways, a back burner issue. And I think there's a sequencing that typically we'll go through it. And you're seeing the first tip of the sequencing, I think, with some elimination of some games, but try to keep the season. And then we've been told, you know, to prepare for like a split season where you play some games in the fall and some in the spring. And then the last scenario to really talk about is just a spring only scenario. I think it'd be difficult, but I you know, all of it's been difficult. So, I'm for it. I think the kids just want to play, you know, and they don't care if it's in the spring or the fall. And we need to kind of keep that in mind I'll do whatever we need to do, to give them a season, to give us a season and all of those kind of things. Again, to get them in the starting blocks. I don't know when that race will start, but I need to do everything possible to get them in the starting blocks.
You have a lot, you know, you have a number of important revenue streams. I guess there are no unimportant revenue streams, but, you know, playing those money games, but obviously gate receipts. And none of us are sure right now if we're going to see fans in the stands at all. How much does that drive your decision about when you guys will play?
Well, I think kind of to me, one of the key indicators and where I'm encouraged is the vaccine, you know, and you're starting to read some really hopeful things about the vaccine and just that the administration put $1.6 billion with a B into like four or five labs and people are think that they're getting close and narrowing it down. And so to me, that gives me the greatest hope because we're dancing with a partner. We don't know what it is right now. And kind of when we put it all together, we're finding out just in the summer how difficult it is just in isolated environments. So it's going to be really challenging in the fall. So that's what, to me, the more time we can buy to get us to the vaccine, and then I think then sports become more real and that we can do more things without having fans. You know, that hurts, but everything so far has been kind of a body blow, whether you don't have the NCAA tournament and those kind of things. So we would adjust, you know, and some ways you save a lot of expenses and those kind of things for us on some of your sports in particular. And so I think we could survive that. I think all of this in the short term, if we lose the fall, we're all going to survive. We're not going to close our doors, those kind of things. It's serious, but we'll have to make some really serious adjustments budgetarily, but we'll get through it.
How much is your decision as a conference dictated on what other group of five conferences do, just like, you know, the way the Power Five conference schools are thinking?
Well, we're all linked in some way, Mark, and so that's what we're finding out. And I think there was disappointment in the timing of the Big Ten's announcement. I don't think anybody was overly surprised at the content, but maybe at the timing. And so so we're all linked together, and you know, some group of five, like the Mountain West, they lost a lot of games with the Pac-12 announcement. The MAC lost a lot of games with the MAC announcement. And so, depending on what the ACC, the SEC, and the Big 12 do, we're all kind of linked. We've told our commissioner that we minimally we would like to have six conference games. And that means we'd play everybody in our division one time. And our non-conference is still really important to us, those of us that have non-conference games. Our UConn game is still really important to us. We've got other schools that are playing, like Army and Liberty and some of the independents, that those games are important to them as well. So we'll just have to kind of adjust and see where everybody's at and then do an evaluation on how many games that we should play and how many conference games we'll have, and how many non-conference games would we be able to keep.
Well, Chris, we're rooting for all this to go as well as possible. We appreciate the time, as always, this morning.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you, and you're doing a great job, and hopefully you'll have some game results to talk about soon.
Yeah, we hope so, too. Have a good day, man.
Take care. Bye.
All right. That is Chris Massaro, the athletics director at Middle Tennessee State University. A long time in that role for Chris. When we come back, we'll have our friend Dave McGinnis with us, Coach Mack from Titans Radio. Full hour coming up between 8 and 9 here on 104.5 The Zone, The Wake Up Zone. Don't go away.